All right, all the commissioners are present. We'll call this meeting back to order. Our next item is to have a conversation with Joanne Hovis, CTC. Joanne, if you'd come on up, we'd welcome you up. And we have Russ Elliott. Russ, we'd like to have you come up to the table as well. Russ is the broadband manager for the Wyoming, is the Wyoming Business Council? So, welcome.
Thank you.
And we have Elena Zipley on conference call. Good morning, Elena.
Good morning.
Okay. So, Joanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. It's always a pleasure to be in Sublette County. So, I'm here this morning to report to you on the progress on the broadband public-private partnership planning and where we are and what we have learned since the last time I reported to you, which was just before Thanksgiving. At that time, as you'll recall, we had the bids in on a competitive process that was made available to all providers who were interested in engaging with the county and the towns, the consortium of communities in Sublette County working on this project. But what we didn't have were sufficient granularity on numbers. At that time, Thanksgiving week, you directed me and the working group to conduct follow-up negotiations and discussions with the bidders and to come back to you with final numbers early this year, which is what we are doing now. So I am delighted to report to you that we have three very strong, very credible bids from three very solid and credible potential partners for the county and the towns. And I will go into detail about that in just a moment. But if I may, I'm going to take a step back, talk a little bit about the background of how we got here, bringing us to this moment where we have these three bids that I think present you with some very attractive options, and also give you a status update on the other pieces of the project that are also a critical part of making those bids part of a viable project. So I have been working on this project with you for just over a year, and before that, there was substantial planning on the part of the working group representing the consortium. You've done several years of work and planning in the space around broadband, but in particular around trying to ensure that the broadband in the county is world-class, is comparable to that available anywhere in the United States, such that businesses, including home-based businesses, are not precluded from operating in Sublette County on the same terms as they would in Jackson or in Cheyenne or in New York or in Los Angeles or in any other part of the country. And that has been seen from the very beginning as an economic strategy for future-proofing the county and its infrastructure, with this infrastructure that is effectively the electricity of the 21st century. That is how the project originated. And I've been involved over the past year or so. What we've done during that time period is a lot of financial planning, business planning, and so on, but critically, and I think most importantly, outreach to the private sector to see how this project, which ultimately will be executed by a private sector entity offering services, commercial services, to businesses, to residents, and to institutions, how the consortium can engage with the private sector to ensure that this is a private sector opportunity, that it's a fair one, and that it's an opportunity for private sector innovation and competition. So we went through a process first of releasing a request for information. It was widely distributed. We got a number of responses, and we engaged with all of the respondents to the request for information, seeking more information, trying to learn what the interest of the private sector was. Based on the very positive feedback we got as part of that process, we then, and by we I mean the consortium represented by the working group with support from myself and my team, we released a competitive request for proposals to the private sector, seeking private interest in partnership with the consortium to use, in the event that the consortium is able to build this infrastructure, to use that infrastructure over some period of time and offer commercial services to the public. The RFP, as I said, was distributed very widely. We made sure that it came to the attention of every private entity that was potentially a respondent that is either in this market, near this market, or might be in any way interested in this market. We actually even had preliminary interest from a company located in Europe. To give you a sense of how broadly we distributed the RFP to make sure there was full competition, we did not get any bids from anyone in Europe, which is probably not necessarily a bad thing. We are, but we got three very credible and solid bids from three companies that are either already in the county or well positioned in the region. That is the background to how we came here and the work that we've done to date on the RFP. The bids are strong, as I said, all three companies, and I should name the companies. They are Allwest, Visionary, and Silver Star, and you have this information in my memo. All three companies are solid financially and have strong technical qualifications and credentials. All three companies are well experienced at partnering with the public sector. In different ways, they've all had somewhat different models, but they all have public sector partners that have facilitated and enabled them to enter or expand in markets that were otherwise not economically viable, such that they are respectful of public sector goals and what you are trying to accomplish here and your economic vision for how this project should materialize. And all three companies made commitments in writing in responding to the RFP that they would not only lease the infrastructure asset, assuming it is built, from you over an extended period of time measured in decades, but they would also pay a lease fee over that period of time designed to compensate the county and the towns for their investment over that extended period of time with an interest payment designed to reflect the commitment that had been made by the public sector. And I think this is perhaps the most critical point, that they would absorb all the operating costs over that period of time measured in decades, such that, assuming the contracts get written right, and they will be, that you are protected from unforeseen costs, unforeseen risk, or anything happening in the future where you are in a position where you have to lay out significant additional funds to cover costs that were not anticipated. They will agree to commit to cover all of those operating costs. As a result, I think what we have are three attractive applications and very unique opportunity, and this I think is the critical point, a unique opportunity here at extremely low risk for the county and the towns to build this future-proof infrastructure. The infrastructure, as it has been conceived from the very beginning going back several years, is to connect the county to the internet backbone in a way that makes you less dependent on a single line going down, a backhoe hitting something, some other kind of event that might lead to outages, which makes it impossible for a business to function if they feel that they are that vulnerable to a single point of failure. So it's designed to create a backbone out of the county that will remove that single point of failure and give businesses the confidence that they will not lose service if they locate or remain in Sublette County. It is also designed to put world-class infrastructure in front of all of the businesses in the three towns, such that you know that for many decades to come, the services available to your businesses will be as good as anything in those other communities I mentioned, ranging from Jackson to the largest cities in the country. And it is designed to come in very close proximity to most of the residences in the communities as well, such that it will be a relatively simple matter for the provider to then extend services to residential premises. This is very important from an economic standpoint because if, as I do, for example, I work part-time out of my home, broadband to the home for someone part-time, full-time, starting a home-based business, continuing a home-based business, working in retirement, and so on, is a critical economic asset. And then most critically, I think, and the final point about the infrastructure as it is planned and designed is it is designed to serve as the backbone to support service to the most remote unserved rural parts of Sublette County. And that means the places where it is extremely challenging for any provider to find a business case to deploy even low levels of internet service, let alone world-class internet service. The analogy is really like to the major highways or the major roads going through the community. They make it viable to then build the smaller roads and the driveways and the long paths to the homes that are in the more remote areas. That backbone will be there. That backbone will also go to tower locations, making it possible then for higher quality wireless service to be extended to those rural areas. That's the project as conceived and that you have before you now. The project also has in place two essentially written grant applications that we are seeking your authorization to go ahead and file. The federal shutdown has created something of a wrinkle on the timeline. We are ready to file, but the federal government is not ready to receive our grant application, unfortunately. So there's a little bit of a slowdown on that, but I'm optimistic, perhaps over-optimistic, that that issue will be resolved in relatively short order. So those are the two pending grant applications that will then supplement the county and town funding to build the total budget necessary to deploy the infrastructure that I just described. I am also recommending, as you've seen in my my memo, that given the new development of a new federal funding program focused on the most remote and unserved areas of the county, that we develop a corresponding grant strategy to work with a selected private partner to address whether there is, and I think there is, a very viable chance of getting federal funding to get infrastructure to the most remote parts of the county where the economics simply don't exist otherwise to build that infrastructure. And then I'm also delighted to report, and I will leave this to the state to discuss, that there may be a potential for state funding along those lines as well, and all of that should be built into the broader strategy over the next couple of months. Finally, I should, I think, give you a quick summary of my recommendation as to the potential partners and then wind up my introductory presentation. But as I said, three very strong bids from three very strong companies. You are in the most fortunate of positions, and I don't often have this kind of situation in the projects that I do. We think any of the three would be a strong partner. As we prioritize them, however, we would recommend entering into negotiations first with All West, and assuming those negotiations go well and a contract that protects both parties' interests can be negotiated, that would be our top choice for your partner. All West has given us positive indications on most of the factors we were looking at, and we plan to negotiate with them on anything else. We also think they would be a very strong partner for thinking about those more remote rural areas and the grant strategy for that. In the event that the negotiations with All West are not successful, we would recommend entering into negotiations with Visionary, which already has a presence in the county and, like the other two companies, demonstrated a significant commitment and interest in this project. And finally, in the event that those negotiations are not successful, we would recommend entering into negotiations with Silver Star. And none of this is to say that Silver Star is not a solid company or as good as the others. We just, as we looked at it, we had to rank, and that was the ranking that appeared based on a number of factors, including cost effectiveness, proximity to the county, and so on. But it's frankly an embarrassment of riches to have three solid bids and three solid partners with whom to negotiate, and I think credit is due to the county, the towns, and the working group for tremendous efforts thus far to get to this point. Let me stop there, but I hope I've sort of given you the update that you were looking for and that you directed us to go out and analyze when we spoke just before Thanksgiving.
Okay. Thank you, Joanne, and thank you for prioritizing your recommendations. I think at this point, Russ, would you like to make some comment, which was alluded to by Joanne,
yes,
in terms of moving forward with the most outer reaches of the county?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner and members of the Commission, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. I need to echo Joanne's comments about you guys having an embarrassment of riches. I feel humbled that I get to come over here and sit and watch a county that actually is ahead of the game in the state. The state is desperate to have some of this type of leadership replicated across its smaller counties and cities and towns throughout the state. So I've been very curious and very engaged in your conversations over here. Representative Summer sits on my board, and so I get to hear quite a bit and vicariously live through it a little bit. But to be over here and to watch it and see how you guys are interacting and to hear the recommendations and the number of opportunities you guys have, you guys are in a very unique spot right now. And I'm excited just to be here to watch, because I do believe this is going to be a step and repeat that we can do across this state. As you guys showed, you set a good example of how you organize in order to make certain that you guys are not left behind. And you're not just brought up to standard, but you start to set a standard. Joanne said world-class infrastructure, and she's correct. And what you're looking at right now, as the state guy, I came in and I set a vision and a mission and a moonshot for this state. And the mission and vision was make sure every citizen has access to quality broadband. Every business has access to quality, reliable, future-proof, and redundant. You know, you guys are talking about that redundancy right now, how key that is. You can have a town like Torrington that I work with quite often right now that has one provider in there. They've got the fiber connectivity. They've got very good connectivity. But when it goes down, they're down. Hospitals are down. Businesses are down. Everybody's down. So they had some forethought in that they went out and they built the better infrastructure. But where they missed right now and we're struggling to try to figure out is how you bring a redundant connection in there so that they don't have this issue on a regular basis. You guys are fortunate that you're having that discussion now, along with the world-class type infrastructure. So good work on all those kind of things. You guys, I just wanted to talk about the fact that the timing has never been better. The state obviously is engaged right now trying to figure out how do we help the state of Wyoming get all of its citizens broadband, get all of its counties future-proof type technology. So we're engaged. They've got me running around the state trying to help folks, give some coaching, talk about what best practices, share some of the things that are going on, because most of these counties and cities in this state don't have this bandwidth. And I'm not talking about physical bandwidth. I'm talking about the bandwidth of organization and time and energy, right? So when I walk into a town like JM or Beulah or Carlisle or Saratoga or these smaller communities, they don't have this organization. They're way behind the curve. So to watch this and to be able to go and share with them what you're doing, I think will be a big boon for the state. So again, thank you for letting me be here. But the timing's good. CAF II money has been awarded. There's $30 million that's come to the state of Wyoming to a few providers that are going to be serving the most rural parts of unserved parts of the state. Along with the CAF II money, there are funds available in my pool of state money. There's a grant fund out there for serving some of the most unserved parts of the state. They have not been tapped yet, so I've got about $10 million sitting in an account. We're trying to figure out how to get that moving, and I have some ideas around that, and I'll share those with you in just a second. Obviously, the feds are big time engaged right now. You know, there's a lot of infrastructure money that's going out there. There's a new USDA fund called the Reconnect fund that's out there to a tune of $600 million. There's the farm bills out there for $350 million. There's $1 billion out there in Fed money that needs to be spent in this next year and a half. I'm going to make sure Wyoming gets its share of that. You know, it's going to be hard because we're a small state. We're a red state. We don't bring a lot to the table for these folks. But if we're noisy and we're organized, which we are, we'll have a much better opportunity. The scoring system for a lot of these federal grant programs, and as Joanne alluded to, they're in vacation mode right now, a little bit, a forced vacation. But the scoring takes into consideration whether or not the state is organized. Does the state have a broadband plan? Does the state have a process around right-of-ways? Does the state, and we have all those things in place. So the scoring system automatically, anybody that goes forward for any of those funds, gets state points already, which is unique. I've got a number of states calling me right now saying, how do we get there? And we've got there in 6 months because we went after it. So timing's good there. We've got funds. There's a big movement right now about healthcare. I was up in Jackson this weekend. I was meeting with some St. John's Hospital up there and talking to them about rural telehealth. And this county is a big one on their radar. They want to make certain this county has the type of connectivity they need in order to bring specialists in so that they can do the work that they need to do so folks here don't have to drive to Jackson, don't have to do those things. You can do tests here and you can be seen over the telehealth network now that's getting set up in this state. The state is rallying around telehealth. They got $10 million in the EHR in their health records system going on, or their information system, you know, for state connectivity. So the timing is good there, and all these things are coming together at the right time. So I think it's critical you guys continue to move this thing forward, and that I get to watch, and I can certainly give insight as a guy that doesn't have a horse in a race, but does have an interest in seeing this come to a successful conclusion where you guys are taken care of. And nobody's going to take care of yourselves better than you guys will, you know. And the more you do this, the more you're bringing leverage. You're bringing that leverage is motivation. These companies will, you know, as they start to see there's things happening, there's going to be some delivery. With regard to some of the most rural reaches of this county, that's where I'm going to get engaged. So you're going to see this CAF II money will come out, and they're going to be building into these areas, and this CAF II money came for unserved parts of this state, and some of your county was awarded that money. There's also some areas that did not get awarded that are still going to be unserved. I'm going to be focusing very, very much on those areas in this county especially. So as the CAF II recipient starts to build out, I'll be working closely with them to ensure that we fill in the gaps of those areas that weren't fortunate to be part of the CAF II award. So I guess what I'm saying is timing's right. You guys are well organized. Keep the momentum and take advantage of this, because I think it's going to be a 10 years from now, people are going to be sitting back saying, "Wow, good decision this county made."
Any questions or comments for us?
First question: what does CAF stand for?
I'm sorry, Connect America Fund.
The CAF.
Yeah. Connect America Fund. They've had a couple iterations of it, and this was the second. I actually think there's going to be a third coming out. So, Connect America Fund.
My concern all along has been the more remote areas of the county, and I guess my question is, before we're committed to move forward with tax dollars, either from the county or the state, will we have an opportunity to develop a plan? And what I'm thinking is an example. We kind of know where the conduit and the fiber's going to be, roughly. But will we have a plan to approve that would include, here's how we're going to reach these remote areas. We're going to have towers here, here, and here that are going to reach these areas, and commitment from somebody to build those towers? Or do we put in the conduit and then just hope for the best? And I hope we don't have to do it that way. I hope we can have a full plan that'll reach everybody before we start anything in the ground. And I guess that's my question. Will we have that opportunity?
So, Commissioner, that's an excellent question. Let me suggest a few pieces to the answer. The first one is that if you direct to go forward with negotiations with the potential partner, then getting commitments from them around fiber service to towers and what their plan is will be part of that negotiation. It will also be part of the engineering and design work that I think needs to be done for the grant applications. We need to do some preliminary design work to be sure that the cost estimates are accurate and to provide some granularity to the federal and state funders that we're looking to for grant funding, that that we have detail around that. So it will be built into that component as well. Third, one of the things I am hoping you will direct me to do is to work with the selected private partner on a grant strategy for the more remote areas. So the project, when I was brought in a year and a half ago, was focused on the backbone fiber out of the county and the fiber to pass all the businesses in the towns and to connect the towers. And that's the backbone, right? That's your highways, that's your major roads in and out, and that's very important. it is critical to have a strategy now for the most remote areas. Once the backbone is in place, the remote areas become much easier to serve, still challenging. The economics are still very difficult. But what we have in front of us that we did not have a year ago is two potential funding sources. The first one through USDA, the ReConnect program that Russ alluded to, and the second one, his own funding program, which was created by the Wyoming legislature a year ago, and that will hopefully be aligned with the more remote areas of the county. I would like to be able to develop that strategy. What I can't promise is that there is a plan, given the available funding, that gets connectivity to 100% of the remote premises, but I think we can develop a strategic plan that over time does that, and that really substantially chips away at the areas that are currently entirely unserved. And that, to the timing point that Russ made, is our timing is very good right now because there's the $600 million that USDA is going to make available over the next few months, and there's the state funding. Next year may look different. We just don't know. It's entirely unpredictable. That $600 million was in last year's omnibus budget that Congress passed and the President signed. So I think that's a long answer to your question with some caveats, but I think the answer is yes, and I certainly think it's well worthwhile doing exactly what you've asked for.
I'm David Jones from NGL Connection in Evanston, Wyoming. We run a WISP, a wireless ISP, and we specialize in getting infrastructure to the way out rural because, like they've explained, fiber is really expensive trying to go out when you're only going past five houses. So what we specialize in is taking that backbone and extending it out wirelessly. I do have a question of, when you have this installed, what do you have plans for, like the actual fiber in the ground? Are you only going to be with the partner, the commercial partner, or will other people, so have competitors, be able to purchase part of the fiber runs so that they can also connect into the infrastructure?
May I answer?
Yeah.
For all three of the bidders, we asked them in writing and they responded in writing, would they make a commitment to provide wholesale service to other ISPs, such as this gentleman's company, and they all committed that they would. In the negotiations, we would focus on that enormously because we want there to be opportunity for a company that specializes in the most remote areas. They are a potential partner to the consortium's selected partner. And so this would be a critical piece of making it viable to get to the most remote parts of the county. What I don't recommend is that the consortium or the county lease fiber once the asset is built to lots of different companies, first because I think the economics of that are very challenging, but I also think it adds an enormous amount of administrative complexity and contractual complexity for the consortium. It was an open and fair competitive process. My recommendation is partner with one company, but then have that company partner with lots of smaller companies to create opportunity for them, for exactly this kind of entity to create the opportunity for them to get to the most remote parts of Sublette County.
As long as it's in the contract, that might be doable. I'm a little concerned about your recommendation with All West because we have several dealings with them and they completely refuse to deal with us because they view us as their competitor. So as long as you have that in the contract, that might be good. But again, because it's there up to them, they could say, oh, sure, you could use it, but it's $100,000 a month.
Okay, let me make a comment with regards to what Commissioner Bousman brought up and some direction I think we're moving towards or should be considering. Number one is these issues and your issue should be brought forward once we have established or given direction for detailed contract negotiations with this vendor. I think Joanne has heard our concerns and we'll pay attention to those. Now, let me just say this too. if we move forward with detailed contract negotiations and those contract negotiations aren't suitable to us, the consortium, then we don't have to accept them. We can either let it lie or we can move forward with the second vendor on the list. So we're still in the driver's seat in terms of what our expectations are with these concerns and having them in writing. With regards to the county spending money, I think we're a long way from that. Of course, that's the direction I'd like to see us proceed and moving there, but that depends upon several things. Number one is the results of these detailed contract negotiations. Number two is going to be these grant applications that are now pending, but hopefully after today will be very close to moving forward. And so that would depend upon the grant money available for this current project. Having said that, the commissioner's intent all along to even consider such a project would be that we were not going to fund more than 50% of this project and would expect that the other 50% would come from grants or private partners. As with regards to our 50%, whatever that is, we have allocated, I think, $7 million, $6 million more recently into an account for communications. So I think our initial understanding was that we had the capability of moving forward with this project, not in excess of $6 million. But breaking that down, let's assume that this project cost us $12 million. Our position on this would be that half of that money, or $6 million, and I'm just using these as numbers for example, because I'm not sure, we're not to the point we know exactly what the project cost is, and we don't know what our grant monies are going to be. But assuming the project cost is $12 million, what we're saying is a consortium would be willing to put up $6 million. Now, from the commissioner's standpoint, that consortium includes the three towns who have obligated at this time $2 million of their money towards this broadband project. So if that's the case, the commissioners are looking at $4 million plus their $2 million to reach half of the $12 million goal. I just want to make it clear that that's our level of commitment moving forward, but we don't have a target in front of us because we don't have a price yet. And I think it very much hinges upon the next step, and that would be to get Joanne and CTC with involvement from the county attorney's office and trying to work through these detailed negotiations. There again, they may succeed in doing that with All West. All West is the number one on the list for recommendation. But if those don't succeed or All West doesn't concede to what our expectations would be, then we have the capability of going to Visionary and going from there. So, Elaine, are you still on the line?
I am.
Would you like to say anything?
Actually, no.
Okay.
I wouldn't like to say anything. We needed to know that total project cost to move forward with ours. And Representative Summers is working diligently in the legislature. It'll be interesting to see how that bill comes up.
Okay. So did I summarize that sufficiently from your perspective, Joanne and Russ?
Yeah, if I may touch on one thing, Commissioner Boozman, is that right?
Bowsman,
when you were talking about the making certain that every last mile, every person gets touched, I'm in that same boat with you, and that'll be my focus as well in this project. So to ensure that there are, you know, contractual opportunities for folks to come in, because these are the companies that will be doing the last mile work for you. It won't be the fiber companies that are getting those folks up. And in fairness, cost is a little less to get this kind of stuff done, so it is feasible. It can get done. And one thing we do have going on at the state is we're building a mapping initiative right now. So it'll be critical for this county to get behind that mapping initiative to where we, you know, if there are those rural areas that we're uncertain whether they're touched or not, that they are they are encouraged to go on to our mapping initiative, register their address, register any kind of speeds they have at this point in time, or none. You know, if they can, come to a library and put it in. But we've got a very specific site. We are working through a very detailed mapping initiative in this state that's going to set a standard that other states will be looking at, I believe. And this, I think this will be a great area for us to prove concept. So I look forward to working with you on that.
Okay. So, gentlemen, how would you like to move forward?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question, because I've been hearing about a lot of things except a specific time frame, and I know you can't get too specific, but if we've all the fiber in place in the communities and it's up and running, how long out is it going to be before someone like myself has that, which is 25 miles from any place? Is there a time frame you can show that? That would say, once we're in place here, 3 years, 2 years, 4 days, we will have you up and running.
So the answer to that, I think, is also multi-part, forgive me, but some of it depends on the availability of the federal and state grant funds and our success in getting that funding, because your home 25 miles away is exactly the kind of place where that the federal and state funds for unserved areas are aimed at. And I think there is an opportunity to get funding for that relatively quickly, such that ideally you would see service in around the same time frame as the fiber gets activated in the towns and in the backbone and so on. But some of that will depend on the success we might have with those other grant programs in the short to medium term. It is also possible, but not guaranteed, that even without that, the backbone fiber will be sufficient to, once it connects towers, to enable better service to you, even without the grant program. So for example, if you have fiber optics to a wireless tower in an area that, as here, is very hilly, but not necessarily enormous amounts of trees, but even with the trees, and these things just get in the way of wireless signals, depending on what wireless technology is being used, under optimal circumstances from that tower, the wireless signal can go 10 to 20 miles. So the key is going to be then, if you're at 20 miles, 25 miles away, do we have a tower in the right place, and do we have fiber to the right place? That's some of the planning and design work that needs to be done now. So I wish I could say to you it's definitely X number of months or years. I can't, but I can say that that's very much part of the rural strategy that I am recommending we develop now and that the state is clearly very focused on as well.
Comment?
We could really help with the rural strategy. To answer your question, if the infrastructure is in place and the backbone is active, we don't need any grant money. We don't need any extra. All we need is some tower locations. And we've had, mostly we don't deal with government too much. We deal more with residential, because it can move much faster. And sometimes in that, it can be as little as a month, especially if there's more than two houses out in that direction. Because we can do that quickly, as long as there is permission to put up said tower. And we can extend the fiber with wireless. Like, we have several 10 gig, excuse me for using terms that maybe not everyone understands, but we could extend that for over 5 miles. So even if we have to go behind a hill or behind a mountain, as long as we can relay it, that'll work as well.
If I could just talk real quick on this, and I'll be short, but the answer is exactly what he's saying and what Joanne said. You could be served tomorrow. We just need to know your address, where you're at, and what the logistics of getting you served is. These are the companies that are going to make that happen, you know, and they'll make deals with whomever is the player here. There are other companies like NGL that are already here that are starting to make those deals. So the answer for this is, in my opinion, my mapping initiative is going to be critical, because you're going to come onto my map and you're going to say, I live here. I need service. Help. And I will then turn that over to the local organizations that are serving these types, your more rural places, and say, how do we get this person help? And then I'll be a champion for those. That's where I feel my focus is. I don't focus on the towns. The fiber and stuff will get put down, but I actually think you'll be up before that network itself. That's my opinion. Because CAF 2, who knows, you may even already be in a CAF 2 area. I'd have to look at where your location is. And every location is going to be unique. When we get down to this last mile, hard-to-reach area, each one of these are going to be unique. There's not going to be a, this is the solution to get 25 miles this way and 45 miles this way, and Cora, and then, you know, Daniel, and all these different areas. It's going to be unique to each one of these locations, and we're going to have to take them case by case. And that's where we're going to have to drill down and make that stuff work.
But I think, too, that the commissioners, you need to be aware, because you're dealing with it in other facets of this right now with fire and radios, towers are not everywhere. They're not already sitting there waiting for these things to be put on. So you're going to have to do your ground surveys again. You're going to have to put towers up. Companies like this are going to have to eat that. So you have to decide. These Bondurant's a perfect example. That's a bowl. You've got to get up, and then you've got to come back down to it.
And a tower, in fairness, too, a tower doesn't need to be a tower like we all think a tower, right? These companies don't work on 100-foot towers all the time. They work on the side of a barn, a silo, you know, whatever they've got, and they'll make deals. I did this for 20 years. I was an NGL in Colorado for 20 years, right? So I know that we can make anything happen. I built into bowls, built into Telluride, Colorado. That's a son of a gun. We came over a 13,000-foot mountain and built down into it and then served all these hard-to-reach areas. But they're case-by-case basis, and it's a unique build. These are unique builds. It's not, we're going to go out and build, you know, 50-foot towers. We're going to go out and we're going to look at this and figure out how to get you served. There's a way to get you served. So there's a way to get everybody served.
Moving forward, I think the first step is going to be try to get that detailed contract negotiation.
Correct.
Moving forward, a lot of these other things can be answered by engineering assessments. A lot of it can be answered with money.
Correct.
And if you've got money specifically for that,
yes,
that will help out.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question. Not worrying about who gets the contract, but worrying about you as a private contractor that's not going to be involved in putting in the backbone. Are we, as a county, making a good decision to help you as a private business do better? Is it going to help you? Or if we just scrap this project tomorrow,
there is a need, there is a very large need to have a good backbone. I'll just say it, CenturyLink's not reliable.
Well, we know that.
They don't care about building in the slightest. So you do need something else to get a backbone through. You can scale that differently to where, you know, you can focus more on rural, so you don't have to put so much fiber in the ground, but you do need connection from end to end. But as long as companies like NGL Connection or LR Computer or LR Communication, as long as they have access to the backbone, they can take it and move it away and get to the rural areas much quicker. The other thing that you would need to take note in there, if you say yes, you have to open it to wholesale, they can still, you know, hike the prices way high and not allow anyone else in just because of the high price. So as long as it is competitive and reasonable, and we have access to that, then you would see much more internet options, and you'd see a lot more competitive prices. Because it doesn't matter if you have this access, if it's a monopoly, it doesn't really help.
Which we have now.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think we need to move forward with this in negotiations, but please keep in mind the smaller providers and what I think we need to be concerned about and direct you to be concerned about is the ultimate cost to the consumer. I mean, the homeowner writing the check every month to pay for this internet. We don't want to put ourselves in a position where, geez, we got it out there, but nobody can afford to use it. We've got to be careful of that. It needs to be affordable.
Commissioner, that's why I think these negotiations are so important, but why I am heartened by the fact that we had three credible bids, because these companies, any of the three, would be taking on a very substantial long-term financial commitment here. They're not going to do that unless they feel they will have customers, and they won't have customers unless they price the service at a level that the customers are willing to pay.
Right.
So that's why I'm somewhat optimistic about the framework we have in place. And I hear loud and clear the very clear interest in making sure that smaller competitive players are enabled for purposes of the most remote parts of the county, which is good for the remote parts of the county, good for the small competitive players, and hopefully also good for the partner, because if a company like this is one of their customers buying backbone access, then that's a revenue source for them as well. So it's a challenging negotiation, because I think as a consortium and as a county, you don't really want to be telling a company what it can charge. But we do want to be sure that the structure put in place meets all of your policy goals, and that includes enabling a wide range of different competitors, particularly for the remote parts of the county.
Okay.
I'm cognizant.
We're getting way beyond on our agenda, so I would entertain a motion moving forward.
Mr. Chairman? Given that the scope of work is nearly complete, I motion that we extend the contract with CTC Energy not to exceed $30,000 and expand the scope of work to include supporting the county attorney's office with detailed negotiations with the selected vendor to also develop a more granular cost estimate and engineering plan sufficient to meet the requirements of the grant applications and develop a federal and state grant strategy to access broadband needs in the most remote and unserved parts of the county.
Second.
Okay. I have a motion, a second. In terms of, do we have any discussion? I have one item of discussion. I appreciate that motion is going to be necessary moving forward, but I think we're ahead of the game in terms of we still need to approve a motion for CTC to move forward with direct contract negotiations with All West under certain conditions. But we have a motion on the table. We have a second. Do we have any discussion? If not, I'll call the question. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Now, could we get a motion to approve moving forward with CTC and the recommendation to pursue, and this is important, as we discussed, the detailed contract negotiations with All West in some capacity.
I'd be happy to make that motion, Mr. Chairman. Motion to approve CTC's recommendation that we pursue detailed contract negotiations in conjunction with the county attorney with All West under the condition that some capacity be retained by the consortium and that CTC move forward with grant applications.
I'll second that.
They've been moved by Commissioner Noble, seconded by Commissioner Vickery to move forward with pursuing a contract negotiation with All West involving both CTC and the county attorney. Are there any questions or comments regarding this motion? If not, I'll call the vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. And I think the last thing we need to do, and I'm trying to sum this up rather quickly, as we move forward with trying to get these grants completed, and they're very close to completion now. In fact, I think one of the major holdbacks, as Joan mentioned, might be the government shutdown. But the things that are going to strengthen our grant application, number one, we've just achieved, and that is putting in a vendor on that application. Number two, we have had discussions in terms of what we anticipate on how to share cost, but we're getting down to another important item. And Matt, you may weigh on this briefly, but there has been some work and discussion amongst the working group on the governance aspect of this broadband project. And correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but I think in looking at any various options, you've made the determination that perhaps the Joint Powers Board is the only governing structure to go with?
That's correct.
Okay. So in terms of moving forward, and in terms of strengthening this forthcoming application, I think we need to consider a motion or something to the effect that establishes the Joint Powers Board.
Mr. Chairman, being as we have the other two motions, I move to create a Broadband Joint Powers Board in partnership with the town of Big Piney, Marbleton, and Pinedale. Membership shall consist of two members of county commissioners, the mayor or representative from each of the three towns, and a non-voting member representing the selected vendor.
Okay, have a motion.
Second.
Have a second. Any discussion? If not, I'll signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. So I think what we've done is taken a big step forward with this project, which I think has all the intention, all the capability of helping our entire county in the future and moving them forward. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited about having participation not only from the consortium, but the work that Joanne's done. And Russ, we're going to hold it to you, man. We're looking for some money, more money. So I think at that point, that concludes this portion of the agenda. And thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Elena?
Thanks, Elena. We're going to let you go.
Oh, thank you very much for including me.
Okay, thanks, Elena. Our next item is, we're going to keep on rolling. We might as well. Thanks for coming, Joanne. Safe travels.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Trying to move along. I know we're a little bit behind, but the next item is to have Richard Stem. Richard, if you'd come on up, and we're going to review public land issues.
Don't let the paper scare you. I used to hate it when someone would bring a big pile of paper to a presentation. I'm going to I even got more scared when they would bring one of these up in my old job, but I think it'll help when I get to talking here. My name is Richard Stem, and I'm retired Forest Service. Those of you that don't know me, I spent 28 years in the Forest Service. My last job was I was regional administrator for Region 2. So I was administrator over a five-state region, Colorado, most of Wyoming, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Kansas. And we had 3,000 personnel and rather large budget, 14 national forests, 50 rangers. And we managed that region for all the multiple uses we're supposed to do. I've also been a forest supervisor, a district ranger, a timber staff, regional director of timber, and I even pulled a stint in D.C. as a national director, overall of all things, litigation, NEPA, and policy. I guess I made a mistake somewhere along the line. But anyway, Joel and I have known each other a long time. He knows my background, but I wanted to review that because I want to put into context what I'm going to talk about today. And this is a complicated subject, so I'll try to walk you through this as best I can. but I want to set the stage first to go a little slow before we pick up, and I certainly want to leave time for discussion, because it is a little bit of a complicated subject, but I think the opportunity is huge. That being said, I retired, I think it's 8 years now, 9 years I've been retired. I live in Montana. I'm one of those ones also that want to know why the cable doesn't come by my house. So I'm in the same situation. But I've been doing a lot of consultant work since I've retired because I care a lot about multiple use. I care a lot about national forests and what's going on and what's not going on. And in the last 12 years, my former agency has had a real struggle to deal with a lot of issues in range, oil and gas, and especially forest management. And as a result, especially the Berger-Teton as well, that has even a longer history. And I've been very concerned about that, and as a result, I've kind of loaned myself out. I've become a consultant to different regional foresters around the country. I oversee national contracts. And I work for the CLG, which of course is directly with you all. I have worked directly for the governor's office in Wyoming. I've done it in California. I've worked in Colorado. I go wherever there is questions or concerns or problems relating to multiple use and managing our forests. And the perfect storm has happened in that the agency has had a very difficult time in the last 12, 15 years to respond for a lot of reasons in managing the forests. I could spend hours telling you why that's happened, but that's not important. What's important is the agency is not capable or hasn't been able to respond like it was 20 years ago, 25 years ago. Then you couple that with climate change, older growth forests, decadent forests, and large fires, and you have the perfect storm going on our national forests. And it's affecting the economies, it's affecting air quality, it's affecting the whole ecosystem. So what drives me is, what do we need to do to manage our forests more properly? I'm a forester by education and by practice. And I strongly believe that through wise management, you can negate some of these large fires, at the same time bring economics to local communities, and at the same time set the stage for these forests for the long term to benefit recreation and wildlife and everything else, water quality. So there's that's my spiel. That's what I've been doing the last 8 years. And essentially, as I told you, what I do is I help roll rocks out of the way. I don't know, how else could I say it, Joel?
That's a good way of putting it.
So I have a lot of connections with D.C., and I maintain them. I'm on the board of the National Association of Retirees. I represent Montana and northern Idaho. And we are in constant communication with the secretary's office, with the chief's office, and a lot of connections about what's going on, why, and what can we do about it. Now, that all being said, the agency has had difficulty responding. And there's been a lot of legislation passed in the last 8 to 10 years where they're looking more and more to the states and counties to help out in dealing with managing the national forests. And there are a lot of tools out there that are not being utilized by the agency. And just recently, a new farm bill was passed which grants good neighbor authority to counties. It used to be only to the states. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk through an opportunity for you all, because I happen to believe I'm more interested in long-term national forests. And if the agencies are not up to it, and they're not, they're trying to figure out other ways to get the work done. So that's why I'm here. I want to present an opportunity to you all for you to think about. I've already done this with Lincoln County, and they're ready to roll. No other county has done this in Wyoming. Nobody has done it even in Region 2 or any other place. They've all been doing it in California. They've had a jump start because of the horrific fires out there. The county's just got to the point where they just couldn't stand it anymore. So let me go through a very short course, 3-minute short course on timber sales. I know this might be excruciating, but you need this so that you can put this in context, what I'm going to bring to you. When foresters and Forest Service, whoever, do, when they look at a piece of ground, they'll look at a watershed that'll look like that. This could be Bondurant. This could be LaBarge drainage. This could be the Ham's Fork. It doesn't matter. But they look at a watershed. And in the watershed, there's timber and range, and there's roads, and there's infrastructure, and there's all kinds of things. But we're talking about forest. What the Forest Service does is they'll look at a watershed potential, and they'll say, what's the condition out here? They'll have an inventory. And then based on that condition, they might have, let's say that all of this blue sorry that the folks out here can't see this. I'll flip it around when I get done. Let's say all the blue is forested. This is range, maybe oil and gas situation, whatever. In holdings, private in holdings. But this is forested. And right now, foresters will look at that and they'll say, in those are different stands of spruce, lodgepole, whatever. And in here we have young stands, we have old growth stands, we have decadent stands, we have stands that are very prone to large catastrophic fires, and I'm talking about 80, 100,000 acre watersheds for context. This is not a little deal. What if the simple process, if you want to call it simple, is they'll come in and they'll identify these areas, and then what they'll do is an environmental assessment of some time, looking at this area, then they will identify units, this is it, that need treatment. Those red things represent areas that are in dire need of treatment, and if they do that, they're all over. If they do these, that will also help mitigate large fires, because they might be able to stop them when they're rolling. This also puts in new forests. And what it does is it brings age diversity and different species, and it makes a much healthier forest. Instead of having everything 130 years old and all decadent and goes for miles, and it's all eaten up with beetles. We all know what that looks like. That's not what a forester likes to see. Nor does a wildlife biologist or a hydrologist or any of the other folks, not to mention the hunters and the people that like to go hiking. So they do an environmental assessment, they identify the units, then they do a timber sale contract. And what that means is they'll put this up for bid where a potential mill owner or logger will bid so much money to log that. And this is important to understand this because this is going to fall right into what I'm going to talk about with you all. They will bid on that. It's either sealed or oral bids. They'll bid the timber up. And they bid for the taking the timber out. And in doing so, they'll maintain the roads. They'll do the logging. They pay for the timber, as they should. And then they put it all back to bed again. And then the Forest Service come in and reforest it or do whatever they got to do. The net result is, though, is that the Forest Service gets this done by the logger doing it. The Forest Service doesn't pay somebody to go take the timber out. The logger comes in, takes the timber out, and pays for it. So it's a timber sale, and it's a contract. While they're doing that, they have sale administration, where they have Forest Service people out there keeping an eye on the logger. He's a contractor, and they keep an eye and make sure they're doing it properly, selection, cutting, staying within the units, all of that kind of thing. after they're done, all those receipts, and I'm going to stop now, but this was a 5-minute short course on how timber sales are put up and how they're supposed to work. These timber receipts go right back into the U.S. Treasury, and that's it. Maybe they go to Afghanistan the next time. I mean, they go literally back into the Treasury, unless there's some taken out to do reforestation. There was a time in the Forest Service, the agency operated in the black when there was more logging, because they would do this and this and this with people like me. I did this in Oregon. And then they would sell the timber, and it would cost $20,000 to do this, and they'd sell the sale for $1 million. $1 million would go to the Treasury. And not only that, the logger would fix the roads, build the roads, maintain them, and everything else to do the work. It's part of the timber sale. Everybody benefited. Well, with the logging substantially down, a lot of that is not happening now. And so therefore, you've got the forests in the situation that they're in. So that sets the stage. And what's going on right now is this administration is desperately trying to figure out how can we get more of this kind of work going on, wise, professional work. We're not talking about going in and clear-cutting an entire watershed or anything ridiculous like that, but we're talking about managing the forest. And some units do it better than others. Very frankly, there's 150 national forests in this country, and some of them do it like that, and they're on top of it, and others are woefully behind. And that's why I keep working. So the administration, as well as the Congress, are desperately trying to figure out other ways to get this done other than agency personnel doing it. And that means the state. So they passed the Good Neighbor Agreement some years back. Colorado was a pilot. Idaho was a pilot. Now it covers every state in the country. But Good Neighbor Agreement means this. If you want this work done for a service, and you don't have the horsepower or whatever, or the people, which is true in some places, what they do is they'll enter an agreement with Bill Crapser, the state. It has to be the state, or was. Where Bill Crapser's foresters will go in and do this work. This is why I wanted to walk you through this. They won't maybe do the EA, the NEPA. This is the infamous NEPA black box that you've heard about. But they might do the units, the contracts, the appraisal. They'll even do the sale administration, where you'd actually have someone like Brooke, who used to be here, would actually go in and do that thing. But the Forest Service paid them. Well, why don't they just have their own people? Well, they don't have it. That's Good Neighbor. In other words, the federal agency granted the authority to the state to do this kind of work. That's Good Neighbor. That's a simple definition. Now, the big part of that is, though, that and by the way, the state of Wyoming has not had Good Neighbor agreements. They've only had one. Idaho has 20. Montana has got 7 or 8. They're all going crazy with it. They want to really get in. The states are getting very involved in managing the national forests. And I say hallelujah. I mean, I'm from the Forest Service, but anything that could get this to happen more, I'm all for. Wyoming is a different situation in that Bill Crapser's staff is quite small, doesn't have the capability to do it. We're going to be talking with him hopefully tomorrow about some opportunities. However, this is where I'm going to try to bring this in, Dave. The state, if you understand the Good Neighbor, they would do the work, but then they would have a cost. Then the Forest Service sells the timber sales, they generate receipts, and then the state actually gets reimbursed for those costs. And any costs that are over and above, any receipts that are over and above the costs of putting up, doing this work, the state keeps. Now think about that. In other words, it doesn't go to the Treasury. They're stewardship sales using good neighbor authority. Now, no one else could have done it. It's just the state under good neighbor until this farm bill that just passed. The alternative to this is master stewardship agreements. They've been around for many years. That's what I have here as examples. Counties can enter into a master stewardship agreement and do exactly the same thing. If you had a forester on board or a contractor, and by the way, I have no interest in any of this. I am not promoting this for myself. My interest is to see this happen on the forest. I'm too old to be doing all this stuff. But if you had someone here that you contracted, a forester, that took the lead, and I'll explain this in a minute, and wanted to do this work on the forest, you enter what they call a master stewardship agreement. It's about a 8-page agreement, and I have copies, examples, where you would work with the Bridger-Teton Forest and say, we're going to manage this for you. You get the environmental assessment done. You could do that too, but you probably don't want to off the start. But we'll lay out the units. We'll do the cruising. We'll do the contracts. We'll even oversee the sale administration. And you know what? Whatever our costs are, you'll reimburse us to do that. And on our master stewardship agreement, any receipts they get from the timber that you all put up working with them, the receipts go to the Forest Service to put in a fund to do another one next time. So you are essentially becoming a de facto part of the Forest Service. The big difference, and let me repeat this, the big difference between master stewardship agreements and good neighbor authority, master stewardship agreement works the same way, but anything, receipts that are over and above your cost to do this work, you can contract it out, you can have sale administrators, forestry technicians, you can do it any way you want, as long as it's okay with the Forest Service, it's an agreement. Any receipts from the timber that is above your costs goes to the Forest Service to put in a pool to give you start up again for the next timber sale you want to do. So you're kind of a neutral thing. All your costs are covered, but you're not making money. Good neighbor authority, the receipts come back to you. That's the big difference between the two. What the Forest Service is going to do now that the Farm Bill passed and Good Neighbor Authority gives authority to the counties is they're going to try to figure out if master stewardship agreements and Good Neighbor Authority can go like that and become one. Master stewardship agreements have been around for 10 years, but nobody used them. I was going to make a proposal that you do that. But in light now of good neighbor authority being expanded to have counties and the fact that you keep the receipts instead of the Forest Service putting it in a bank, the extra receipts, you might want to just go with a good neighbor one. It's all right now. The Forest Service is going to get together with a lot of folks once they come back to work. They're going to figure out how to bleed these two together and figure out which is the best way. Master stewardship agreements, which, by the way, California has. Let me give you an example. Tuolumne County, California, they have a master stewardship agreement. I have it right here. And what they do is they are thinning 6,000 acres of Forest Service land. They have contracted that out. They manage it. They do all this stuff. And the Forest Service loves it. They're getting work done. But the county's doing the work, and then they get compensated for all their costs, pays for the salary. You have percent overhead in there to cover that. All that's covered. Then any receipts from the timber that's over and above your costs, that money goes back to the Forest Service, and they turn around and give it back to the county again to start up another timber sale. Is that clear? Does that make sense? Big difference on GNA, instead of the money going to the Forest Service, it would come to you and you manage the account. Personally, if I were you, I'd rather do that. But it doesn't matter. The net result is number one, you're involved right up to your eyebrows with managing the National Forest and getting work done. This work is over and above what the Forest Service is already being paid to do and get the work done. The Bridge of Teton's doing 13 million feet a year, which is what they're doing now. You would be able to bring it up to 20 million, 25 million feet a year. And it's all about treating acres. And you could do anything, thinning, timber sales, anything you want with this master stewardship agreement. I've got an outline on if you wanted to proceed, what to do. There's a lot of nuts and bolts and things you'd have to work out. It's not something you can do like that. But I've got people that could come in here and walk through the process. I got an outline in here about how you can get started, and I have samples and here also of what they look like. So I'm going to give my voice a rest, but I wanted to make sure you understood the difference between Good Neighbor Authority, Mass Stewardship Agreement. Gets the same result. It's just who keeps the receipts and so on. The big thing before I stop is that anytime someone starts up a Good Neighbor Agreement or Master Stewardship, you need some seed money to get started. Forest Service generally doesn't have it. Hell, they don't have enough money to do their own job. Their budget's been cut 45% in the last 14 years, unbeknownst to a lot of people. And so it takes seed money, but there is seed money out there, I'll guarantee you. It's the state, the feds, different accounts, different agencies. Tuolumne County got it from State Forestry. Gave them seed money, got started. In Montana, there's seed money from the regional office. Once they get started, what happens is you start out like this and you just get bigger and bigger. And it just depends on how much you want to take on. It takes you from wanting something to actually being engaged in doing it. All right, I'm going to give my voice a rest here.
Okay. A question, Richard. With the Master Stewardship Agreement, the money goes back to the Forest Service, and the money is supposed to be used for future projects to perpetuate it and keep it going.
Exactly.
Who makes that determination on the worthiness, the choice of the project? Do the counties and the state then have a seat at the table in terms of moving that forward?
Both of you. Okay. It's in the agreement. Okay. You sit down and you work out a five-year plan together. And if the Forest Service starts getting a little rough about it, then you just call up somebody that can. That'll be taken care of in a heartbeat. I'll just leave it there.
Okay. I understand that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is a philosophical change because of the administration in Washington.
Yes.
Okay, so we're talking about a 20 to 30 year philosophical attitude towards how the forest is managed, which has got us in this point right now. How are those people at the Forest Service going to become a partner without changing their philosophy very, very quickly?
Most of the Forest Service people now are so frustrated that they can't get things done. They're looking for any help they can get.
Okay.
There are a few people that are going to go, not in my yard,
right.
Not in my deal. That's a leadership issue that leadership needs to deal with. I've intervened on 18 forests since I've retired to deal with issues. And I would suggest to you that 90% of those people are saying, good God, help us. Somebody help us. Our forests are unraveling. We don't have the resources, the skills, the people to do the job. If I brought the forest supervisor to Tuolumne County, California in here, he'd be jumping up and down his chair telling you what a great thing this is.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to take a lot more time, but on December 21st, I believe it was, the president issued an executive order to USDA and BLM directing a whole series of active management items to happen in terms of forest management. So that is out there. In conjunction with that executive order, The Western governors have just entered into an MOU with USDA that would provide a framework for how the Western governors could be further involved in active forest management. So the purpose of the meeting that I set up tomorrow with the state forester, with Bill Krapser, Richard, Bailey Schreiber, our WCCA natural resource attorney, and Lincoln County will be there as well, is to start the discussion with the state forester of, in Wyoming, what might this look like, and start developing a strategy that we could take to the governor, that he could then take to Western governors, and maybe it might be like pilot project for Wyoming in conjunction with maybe other governors would have some pilot projects in their states that they would want to pursue. We don't know that yet for sure. We don't know what it might be called. We're just starting this discussion tomorrow with state forestry to start figuring out, you know, what are their limiting resources. What does state forestry is going to need some more resources if they're going to expand this very much. They don't have the people right now. And where would counties go if we were interested, for example, in doing a timber sale on the Evergreen, which is the next area defined as a priority by our local forest collaborative, which includes the Forest Service and all our multiple users, agriculture, recreation, they're all involved. That does, having a forest collaborative in place and active, does give us a step up as far as qualifying for funding. That's the sort of things that Richard can be a help on, is grant money from USDA, Forest Service, that sort of thing. So we're just kind of, this is just the baby steps of starting this out and trying to define what options might be, what our opportunities might be for active forest management, and the fact that if we did use good neighbor authority, that the county would get to keep that money, that would put us in a better position to start the next project, for example. But it's going to take some doing to get from where we're at today to get to a project that's actually doing something on the ground and increasing the health of the forest and making it better for all our multiple users, including recreation, grazing. Everybody that uses a forest realizes we're better off with a healthy forest than we are with nothing but dying, falling down trees.
So you're saying with the good neighbor authority, is it the county or the state that gets to keep the money?
Right now it's the state.
But it could be.
It can be the county, okay, with the new farm bill.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why the farm bill just passed. And hell, I was ready to do this talk to you guys months ago about this, before the farm bill passed. And now that that's passed, the only little thing here is, should you do a master stewardship agreement or should you do good neighbor authority? But all the bells and whistles are the same effect, and all the bells and whistles would be the same for you all. And my recommendation to you all is that you start thinking about jumping on this quickly. There's a lot of motion going on, especially with that executive order that was just issued before Christmas by the president. He just told the Forest Service to increase their amount of acres being treated to 3.5 million acres. Well, I know what the Forest Service is thinking. It's like, really? I'm sorry, but you know, I was in the position of being over a region. If I got an order like that, I'd say, well, that's fine. Do you want to explain to me how I'm going to do this? Because I got so many widgets that I can do. And I could organize and build incident command, and I've done all that stuff, but you can only do that so far, and you got to go outside of your agency and say, I need help. And that's what's going to happen. And in February, I'm going to be in Arizona with a handful of other people, and we're meeting with the undersecretary and the chief about this very issue. Like, what are you going to do? And what help do you need? because the retirees are really stepping up to try to help them. There's a bunch of us that got some pretty strong ideas about how to help, and they're really listening to us now, which has been a godsend. So between that and the stuff that Joel just went through, working with Bill Krapser and the governor and all that stuff, you can see this tsunami that's coming. And because of 99.9% of the people are very upset about what's going on out there.
Right.
And I would suggest that you all as a county start really thinking about some infrastructure that you might want to build. A project leader, it could be a contractor, get some seed money, a project leader, maybe a part-time accountant, some contracting folks, and actually build yourself a little mini team that can start thinking about this. And you can either use a master stewardship agreement, which is the thing I laid in front of you. It looks ominous, but it's not really as bad as it looks. But you can actually jump ahead of the game of other counties, and I think Lincoln can too. I think the opportunity on the BT is quite strong. As we did work in Evanston, we really, really got with the program down there on the Wasatch Cache. I think the same opportunity is here. Now, one thing that's important is that when you build, you have a master stewardship agreement, and that's an umbrella. And that just says how you're going to operate. That's what you have in front of you. That's the bottom line basic skeleton of how you will operate. Within each master stewardship agreement, you have project agreements. That's what gets to where do we go and how do we do it and all that. Here is stewardship agreement, supplemental project agreement. And you look at it, it's not too ominous. But that's it. This, just dump, they do these for every timber sale they do. And it's under the master stewardship agreement. So, even under the good neighbor authority, by the way, same analogy. You have a G&A agreement about how you're going to work together, who's on first. And then you have the projects, which are the timber sales. These timber sales can generate a lot of money. The Bridger Teton doesn't have a lot of value in their timber, so it takes a number of acres to get value. But I just think the opportunity, if folks jump on it now and start thinking about infrastructure, they're going to be a lot better off when the trigger gets pulled. That's my message today. Now, here's the bottom line. This is an outline. If you wanted to start thinking and proceed, this is what I would do. This is my recommendation. Because there's a whole lot of pieces and parts here. But that, essentially, I don't want to take the time to read it, but it essentially gives you steps, and then it explains it at the bottom, but this outline, by the way, is my discussions with people around the country that have done this, what works and what doesn't. I put down what works. And that's essentially how you can get started. Now, in the meantime, the Forest Service, once they come back to work and people get talking to them, they're going to work out this business about the pros and cons of master stewardship agreement versus GNA. Now they got this new. Once that gets landed, it'll be a cakewalk for you all to go one way or the other. And I think from the information we get potentially tomorrow, that'll also help you to decide which way you want to go. The bottom line, though, is either way you go, you should go. That's my recommendation. Go for it. The Bridger Teton is ripe.
One of the big challenges, of course, is going to be getting the infrastructure in place to deal with all this stuff. Expanding our local sawmills, all that
yes,
kind of stuff.
Yes, that's the other big issue that's
going to be a big one.
Commissioner Chairman, so 25 or 30 years ago, and I'm going to touch on just what Joel did, we had 8 or 10 small sawmills in Sublette County.
Yeah.
Today, there would have to be the startup mode for those folks to get back in business, which that's probably not going to happen. So the big piece of the puzzle is the workforce who would be required to take care of a project like this. And without the local people involved in this, from a standpoint of timber sales, I don't see how, quite frankly, we could benefit from it.
Well, Richard?
Let me... The cycles where a lot of the sawmills and the Forest Service are doing a lot of stuff, and then they stopped, and then they dropped down, and timber indices dropped and all that stuff. But what's happening now is that there are certain Forest Service units now that are ramping back up again. Evanston is a good example. They were virtually, that district, that whole southwest Wyoming was doing nothing. And we took them from 2 million feet to 12 million feet to 20 million to 50 million. And as a result of that, South and Jones put on double shift and bought out Mountain View and put that online. And right now they've got so much wood, they're just full to the gills. And they went to a firewood processing plant. They're feeding the whole face of Salt Lake City with firewood, making more money doing that than they are cutting 2x4s. My point to all of that is that what if you all started doing this and started doing some timber sales, they're already starting to look over here because of the collaborative and what's going on. There are loggers right now in Idaho that said they could pull this off if you make the sales big enough. It can economically pull it off. And everyone told me that if we put up sales in Amsport, they'd never sell. There's only been one that hasn't sold, and it was the Forest Service's fault for a stupid appraisal. What every sale they've put up, they've sold so far, almost to the tune of 30 million feet. And the question is if you build it, they will come. But the interim time is what causes the problem, and that's where the state can help with some grants, some incentives to build smaller, so, and they can bring in portable sawmills until the infrastructure can catch back up with what you'd be doing theoretically for long term here. But the trick is to make these economical sales, not little some piecemeal thing that somebody couldn't afford to haul it and process it and what have you. And the Timber Association in Portland said they would come over here and help you all do that. And I've already talked to them about that, and they said whatever we can do to help with that, we'll come over and help out.
Well, so, I understand that, but I'll take one more minute, and then I'll be done.
I'm not disputing it,
But part of the reason we had the demise of the smaller operators in Sublette County was because the timber sales got bigger and bigger and bigger that were offered that right. They could not, right. They just couldn't buy them.
Right.
And when they went away, then the bigger companies ultimately left also.
Right.
So a project like this, to me at least, is almost incumbent that you have the small operators involved in
absolutely.
Some way, not the big whatever's are out there.
Absolutely. Every region, every forest. I've been a forest supervisor 3 times in Oregon and Ohio, of all places. And it's always been incumbent that a forest has a small sale program, a large sale program, and a POL program, products other than saw logs. They lost their way 15 years, 20 years ago. When they did those 3 things, everyone was taken care of and the forest was taken care of. But every one of these things that have happened have been because of decisions that were made by the agency that didn't have to go that way.
I think you've given us a good overview of what we need to consider, and I think you've given us considerable resources in terms of what we need to review so that we can become more informed as the process goes on. And I certainly think that Joel's participation, whether allowing, hopefully, and your participation with Bill Crapster tomorrow will give us more direction going forward, and we'll have an opportunity to pursue this. So I thank you for your time and your presentation.
You bet. Any other? I'm surprised you didn't ask me.
I had several, Rich, but I'll let it go.
Did you want to entertain any questions?
Unless the commissioners have, we're trying to keep up with our agenda, and I think we've been managed to stay pretty close. I don't know enough to ask any more besides your presentation and looking at your handouts.
Okay.
So I think there will be more forthcoming, and I think you did a very good job in a short period of time of giving us the background on it. So that was good.
I hope it wasn't too complicated.
I think you made it simple.
Oh, well, thank you. This stuff is not ever think. I will leave you, if you haven't seen it, I got copies of the executive order from President Trump 2 days
ago. Yeah, I'd like to see that.
You ought to see this.
Yeah.
If I was an agency person, I'd be sweating right now. And then...
I wanted to jump up and down
when I was there.
Well, I would be. And then I want you to... All this is part and parcel. Is I have this space that's... I have a piece of paper here that's just one each. It's double-sided. The latest Supreme Court ruling on Endangered Species Act.
Oh, really?
You're going to read that. You'll be interested. And here is the guts of the Farm Bill. It relates into forestry. So here's some more information. One sheet each. That's all it is.
Okay.
And here's the Farm Bill stuff by title. The whole Farm Bill. So there you go.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Richard.
Hate to give you a lot of paper, but, you know, that's the way we are right now.
Well, we'll have some reading to do. Thank you.
You'll enjoy some of that information, especially that.
Well, I'm sure it'll be informative.
Yeah. It all does tie right back to this. Every bit of it goes back to that.
There's an extra one here or something.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thank you, Richard.
Nothing yet.
Right, move on.
This is yours,
too. I think the next item on our agenda is the consensus funding. So if we could have the members of the consensus come up to the table, we'll begin that discussion. Good. Where did Mr. Gaffney go?
He stepped up for a moment.
Okay. I was just going to have him give us a brief overview of how this process is supposed to work.
We just started, so I was trying to go ahead.
Yeah. And we're going to have a few people attending.
And then here's Michelle's on.
Okay. Michelle, welcome in. We're waiting on Matt Gaffney to just kind of give us an overview of the consensus project. Have you got Scott? Matt?
Well, thank you for letting us
know. We're starting this. Could you just give us a brief overview of your legal position on the consensus and how that operates?
Sure. On our what? I'm sorry. Our legal
questions. Our legal question. And I also conferred with the Deputy Attorney General who represents the Slip Board, and she was in agreement. The statutory, the rule definition of consensus list is the list must be certified, and I'm reading directly from the definition here. This list must be certified as agreed to by the Board of County Commissioners and the governing bodies of the cities and towns within the county that comprises at least 7% of the incorporated population. So in my opinion, it takes the agreement of the County Commission and at least 70% of the incorporated population, which would be, my math is terrible here, but Pinedale and Big Piney, or Pinedale and Marbleton. Marbleton and Big Piney without Pinedale wouldn't get you to that 7%.
Okay. All right, so the purpose of today is it's up to you gentlemen, I guess, to entertain the projects that's been put forward and then develop a priority list. Now, I guess...
We've got a list here.
Okay, I guess the question I have moving forward, are you at this time able to say you represent your entire councils on this list, or are you going to have to go back to your councils with the list that you have tentatively set the priorities for today and get that approval? And if that's the case, we'll simply move through, get your priorities, have you take it to your councils, and then expect you to come back at our next meeting, having have the vote of your council saying, we, the members, have got a council agreement. This is how we're going to do. So I'm not sure I'm saying that because you don't have your entire council's
pleasure. We've had a special meeting in Marbleton, and they've appointed me to represent the entire council for what we've got proposed here.
Okay. We did the same thing in Marbleton, or Big Piney as well.
So Big Piney as well, as yes. You're all three ready, prepared to say, this is our priority, this is our agreement, and then you're going to ask us for our certification.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Who wants to lead the process?
Well, we've got a list of proposals.
You've got all the projects that are supposed
to be. Yes, we've got the town of Marbleton's projects as number one, the town of Pinedale projects as number two, and the town of Piney as number three. And the amounts of them, Marbleton's being $137,000 and change, Pinedale's being $50,000, and the town of Big Piney at $20,000 for the total of $187,000 and change, which is evidently with the consensus funding that is left from 2016.
Okay, just briefly, if you could go ahead and explain what those projects are and then address the issue if there's been any other projects. There was a public notice given that we were supposed to have till this date for the special districts to present any projects. So I don't know if you want to address that now, but at least give us
briefly
if you could tell us, you got various projects outlined. If you could just give us a description of what those projects are.
Okay. The town of Marbleton, we've got two projects down. One of them being the inlet to the sewer treatment plant is needing some modification done to it. And then the other being water monitoring, a new SCADA system, so to speak, for our water well system.
And those projects have combined cost of?
Combined cost of
$137,386.
Okay. I'll just go. In our discussions, Marbleton, as you know, these are funds that had originally been allocated to Big Piney, and then Big Piney didn't fully use those funds, and so they came back into the consensus funding. In our discussions with Marbleton and Big Piney, Pinedale and others recognized that Marbleton had a higher claim to this. And that we understood that from previous consensus funding, they didn't get everything. So I'm noticing here, and I don't know if Sam wants to speak to this as well, is that we had originally, when I'd spoken to Michelle and Big Piney, had divided the remaining $50,000 into two tranches of $25,000 each, $25,000 for Pinedale, $25,000 for Big Piney. As I see on the application now, Big Piney is only requesting $20,250. Pinedale's project, which is going to be the beautification of Pine Street. We're having some issues of increase in irrigation. We have different businesses that are taking care of the grass. Some areas the town is taking care of. Some areas like the Best Western are taking care of their grass. And so what we want to do is have one irrigation project where all of Main Street is taken care of by the town of Pinedale. And it is a project that we're moving forward on. We expect it to be over $50,000, so the $25,000 falls right in beautiful right on a project that we're doing. But I did notice that Big Piney only requested $20,000, and so there would be a remaining amount of $4,760 left in the fund. So I would recommend either that Big Piney take their additional or that we allocate the other $4,000 to Marbleton, because I know that our Marbleton did reduce their ask a little bit so that Big Piney and Pinedale could share $25,000 each. Is that clear and succinct enough?
And Michelle, maybe you know more on the $20,000 we discussed on the project on that one. Do you want to?
Yeah. So the actual price came in at just under $21,000. We could put forth a secondary project. We're having problems with a water well, replacement well one. It is another project that's there. It's about a $5,000 project, but we know that we've already had our fair share of that consensus fund money. So we decided that we would go with a project that is a must do for us, whether it's out of our budget completely for next year or using that consensus fund money to help us with that project.
So I don't know if the commissioners would be, I mean, we could make that change here and then vote on it, or I would rather not have to come back and rediscuss this again. I'd like to kind of be finished with this consensus funding. I don't know if the commissioners would agree with that. But.
So if we decided to split the money equally between $25,000 and $25,000 between Big Piney and Pinedale, like I said, we could come up with a secondary project, but that would be at that $4,000 rate with that water well.
Right, and as I was saying earlier, I know also that Marbleton had lowered their costs a little bit so that we could split that 50 between the two of us. So I can go either way. I'll take a recommendation if I'm either of you.
I recommend split it 25-25 and leave Marbleton's as
okay.
Most.
So Michelle, then I think we would rather you just move that to 25 and then put that remaining 4,760 to your water well fix.
Sounds great. Yeah, we can easily do that.
So with the commissioner's approval, we could amend this document either by pen or type it in there afterwards, but we could vote on that this morning with your approval.
Well, do we need a formal approval from you guys? Do you have to have a motion amongst yourselves? You're just saying with your representative councils, you are in agreement that these award monies that $137,386 goes to Marbleton for their project, and then $25,000 each to the towns of Pinedale and Big Piney for their projects.
That is what the town of Pinedale approved.
Now,
so I can speak for that.
Yeah. That is the priority, and that priority is in consideration that there has not been any other projects from special districts turned in.
We are not aware of any that I
haven't heard. Carrie, you're not a... Okay, so Matt, moving forward, all we need to do as a commission is have a motion to approve their priority list for these monies. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Because in terms of the consensus funding, the consensus folks have to be 70% in agreement with all three of you. You are at 100% agreement. And then for the commissioners, which we don't have, the vote we have is just to approve your request. Is that correct, Matt?
Yes.
So having heard this, do I have a motion from the commissioners to approve the consensus
I saw
request?
Move.
All right. Mr. Vickery has moved that we approve the consensus request. Seconded by Commissioner Bowser.
Well, if I wasn't going to, you were going to.
I wasn't going to.
For the sake of brevity, I'm glad. We have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion? Do we have any comments? I know we have Scott Sherbel on the phone. Any other comments?
No, sounds good to me.
Okay. If not, we got a motion and a second. I'll call for the vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
So, with the chairman's permission, I'll ask Sam Bixler to go ahead and rearrange this form so that we can give it to you.
Right.
Corresponding to the 25-25 and the 187.
And then
137.
You'll have to check with Matt on the process from here in terms of how that, where it moves forward in terms of that consensus money.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys can take care of that.
Do you notify the slip board? Or?
Usually, from what I understand, it'd be the county commissioners will then inform the slip board that it's been approved.
Okay.
But we can work out those details.
You can work out those details.
Outside of this meeting.
Let us know, let Carrie know, and we can
right.
Handle that.
Exactly.
Okay. Very well. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks,
guys.
Thank you, Michelle. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
We go back on the trail.
Yeah, about that.
We got 5 minutes.
Yeah, we're going to take a 5-minute break, and then we're going to move on to Wendy in the Rural Healthcare District.
Second, I kind of wanted to give you a high five.
If there's any lingering stuff, because that was like drinking out of a fire hose. But
yeah.
If there's any lingering stuff, we get it.